Hello, friends! It's your old pal, Arya Helwani, back with another edition of DC and Helwani. Yes, our second to last one of 2020, and my oh my, coming off Saturday night, UFC 256. We got a lot to talk about. We also got some breaking news. Yoel Romero's headed to Bellator. Maybe we'll even talk about my beloved Buffalo Bills. Probably not, because DC's a hater. Anyway, I can't wait to get to it all, but first, I do want to let you know about one of my favorite podcasts here at ESPN. It's called the Hoop Collective Podcast, and it's hosted by my guy, Windy, a.k.a. Brian Windhorst. He's one of the best NBA reporters on the planet, and rumor is that Windy and his guests just dropped an episode where they previewed the stacked Eastern Conference. They'll probably be talking about my New York Knicks and that unbelievable rookie, Obi Toppin. I mean, did you see his debut on Friday? Woo-wee! He's going to be great. Anyway, I'm going to tune in later. I suggest you do so as well. If you want, download and subscribe to the Hoop Collective Podcast wherever you find your favorite podcasts. All right, on to today's program, which may contain some language that's not suitable for all audiences, so listener discretion is advised. Enjoy.
Now making their way to the microphone, DC and Helwani.
I'm in USADA right now taking tests for fun. I got tested yesterday.
Why?
Even in retirement, I'm still cleaner than John Jones. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just going to take tests for the rest of my life.
Here's Daniel Cormier and Ariel Helwani.
Back in your life on this third week of December 2020. Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to a brand new edition of DC and Helwani. That's DC, Daniel Cormier. I'm Helwani, Ariel Helwani. And Daniel, I just want to take this time to welcome you back to your own show.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's how you refer to it, right?
Well, absolutely. Because there are times where I hear you say, I have a show. But you have multiple. I have a show on Mondays. And I'm like, wait a minute. Am I not a part of this thing? I mean,
you should have said, maybe it's our hard show.
It's hard for me to focus. Can I be honest?
What's wrong?
I mean, this brown sweater, bro.
What?
Brown sweater. I mean, it's getting worse.
What?
Look at this brown sweater,
this little
man.
Number?
When you popped on the screen, I said, oh my goodness, it's got this is Burberry?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not one to brag.
Is this Louis Vuitton or Burberry? What is this?
This is Burberry. You see the little.
Oh my goodness.
It's the season. Tell me, I mean, you can't say anything about this, right? This is top notch.
Oh
correct?
My gosh. Look at how you look. I mean, every week you get dressed, you can put on a costume to try to look smart. I mean, look at you waving your pencil in between your fingers. I mean, you're ridiculous.
No one has ever looked smarter talking about cage fighting than this guy right over here. You know that, right? I mean, I'm just trying to class up this joint a little bit.
Get up you got on, man. This is crazy.
Well, I'm glad you like it. I'm glad you like it. Thank you for all the compliments last week. Of course, fifth night of Hanukkah.
Cashmere. It's just a beautiful cashmere sweater.
I mean, this is legit cashmere. So I know it's a very important time. It's a very busy day as far as holidays are concerned, DC. Fifth night of Hanukkah. I presume you and your family have been lighting the candles.
Happy Hanukkah, Samia.
Yeah.
You like that?
That was good. That's not bad. It was close enough.
How do you say it?
Chag Sameach.
Sameach.
Not only.
Sameach.
There you go. You're like a brother.
That means happy Hanukkah.
Yes. Thank you. Not only is it the fifth night of Hanukkah, DC, and as you know, instead of one day of presents, we get 8 crazy nights. So it's a party over here in the Helwani household. Also today, big day, National Bouillabaisse Day.
What is that? What is bouillabaisse?
You guys don't have bouillabaisse?
Gravy? Is it gravy?
No, like the fish stew.
Oh, no.
Today's National Bouillabaisse Day.
Bouillabaisse or bouillabaisse? Bouillabaisse. You're saying that word like you're wearing that sweater. Only a guy wearing that sweater would say that like that.
It's a French stew. Also, I'll get ahead of it. Want to remind you, tomorrow is National Wear Your Pearls Day. So break out the pearls tomorrow. Tell Selena and everyone to break out the pearls.
Who has pearls? Who has pearls anymore? Who has pearls?
Say, I mean, classy people like people who wear cardigans.
Such people as this who wear jackets like that. You look like Mr. What is his name? Mr.
Rogers.
Mr. Rogers. You look or like Mr.
Robinson.
Rogers. You look.
Hey, I'll take that as a compliment. Fred Rogers, a legend. You know who else is a legend? Daniel Cormier, Yoel Romero, the soldier of God. Breaking news around an hour ago. I reported. I don't even know if you know this. We didn't even talk about it. Oh yeah, Yoel Romero has officially signed with Bellator MMA. He will debut as a 205 pounder. Now, we will get your instant reaction to this a little later on in the program, but wanted to get that out there. No, now's not the time. They're telling me, do not talk about this off the top of the show. We need to talk about
it. But you guys understand that I am incapable of staying on task. Yeah, if you say something, I mean, how? Monday, Friday, it was.
I will explain. I will explain.
So wait, you're going to wait. So I have to wait.
You have to wait around 30 minutes.
Why would you tell me?
They told me to say it at the top. I'm just I'm just a media pawn in this game, as Kyrie Irving said. I just do what I'm told. Let's talk about Romero in a bit, but for now, let's talk about what transpired Saturday night in Las Vegas. UFC 256, the final UFC pay-per-view.
I mean, the options for Romero are crazy. Yes. At 205 in Bellator. Like, I mean, I got
more on that for you as well. But really? There's more? You were there. You were one of the lucky souls in attendance Saturday night at the Apex in Las Vegas, UFC 256. First, let me just ask you, what was it like to be like, you're witnessing one of the best fights of the year, maybe the best flyweight title fight ever, Davison Figueroa versus Brandon Moreno. By now, everyone probably knows they fought to a draw. It was an insane fight. They're just in a phone booth the entire time, just slugging it out. Haymakers. I mean, we've never seen this kind of action out of flyweights in a title fight before, with all due respect to the past. What was it like being there? Because you guys kept saying over and over again, it sounds like there's 10,000, 12,000, 15,000 people here.
It was so weird. It was, I mean, listen, very rarely am I buzzing the day after the fight. I couldn't come off the high. Mm. I could not come down on Sunday. I was like so excited. Like I kept talking to people about what we witnessed because it felt so like different, especially at 125. And it sounded like there were hundreds of people in there, bro. It was so loud. You can hear them through the cans. You can hear the coaches yelling. You can hear the people in the background, the oohs and ahs. It was insane to watch these two men go to war as they did. It was great, man. It was so fun. Davison Figueiredo, Brandon Moreno, both guys walk out of there with their head held high. Nobody lost. And I know this sounds like a theme that's growing as we go forward. We're always like, you know, nobody really lost in that fight. But the reality is no one lost on Saturday night.
How do you feel about the draw ultimately? I mean, look, it's a nice little way to end it, right? Because it was so close, but you feel like it was the right call because that's two separate things, right?
Yeah, well, so here's the thing, right? Davison Figueiredo won the fight, right? Like if you take everything considered, you know, the 1 point deduction obviously made it a draw, but he won the fight. Right?
Now, are you saying that based on what the scorecard said or based on what you think?
Scorecard say.
What do you think?
Honestly, I thought Brandon Moreno won the fight.
I mean, you're telling me. I did. For a minute there, I forgot that Figueiredo was even in the fight. You were talking about Moreno.
All right, so here's the thing. Golly. Like, here's the thing, though. If you're a guy that's watched sports your whole life, right?
Yes, yes.
When you have a team or an athlete that is a massive underdog and they're in a fight with a champion like that, or they become the story, right? And I'm watching the fight. And I'm watching the fight, and I'm calling the fight as I see it. And now, I feel like I got heavy, I'm speaking for me personally, on the Brandon Moreno in round three, because I thought he won round three, which ultimately was a deciding factor. I got heavy on round four, which he won clearly.
Yep.
Round two was a very close round, right? And obviously, when I'm speaking to Moreno in that point, see, I thought he won 2, 3, and 4. That's why I thought he won the fight. If I'm speaking to Moreno in 2, 3, and 4, all of those rounds were extremely close. And as they went into round five, obviously it was 2-2. But in round five, I spoke to how Brandon Moreno took his foot off the gas and Davison Figueiredo, if this fight was on the table, he went and took it from him. So no knock on the champ. The guy that's the challenger and the underdog in a lot of situations become the story. Just the way it is. I mean, we've seen it time and time again.
Now, I agree with a lot of what you just said. Here's the crazy part. One judge scored the fifth round for Moreno.
That's crazy.
If that doesn't happen, Figueiredo wins this fight regardless of the point.
Outright, right? Outright. Right.
Isn't that amazing? Crazy. That to me, so the two easiest rounds to score were round one for Figueiredo and round five for Figueiredo. Yeah. Now, yes, but I'll say this. Round four, almost just as easy for Moreno, right? Yeah. So it really comes down to two and three. There are a lot of people who think Moreno won that fight fair and square. I scored it first round for Figueiredo, third round for Figueiredo, fifth round for Figueiredo. But with the point deduction in the third, it becomes 9-9. So I actually agreed from a scoring standpoint with the 47-47.
So when you went second and fourth for Moreno, right?
Yeah.
This is where we found ourselves in that bit of a spot. Because you're in the third round, you get the low blow. This is such a swing round. Yeah. It can go 9-9, but Davison cannot win this round anymore. All he can do is tie, which makes it a very interesting spot. Moreno landed a big overhand right at the end of the third round, and it was a very competitive round. He landed a combination as the round ended, and I was like, oh, my goodness. Davison started so well early in this round, but at the end of this round, the tail end, once Moreno got up from the low kick, he won that portion of that round. The tail end of the round, it would have went from being 9-9 to 10-8. So now I'm like, man, this dude might be up 29-27 going into four, which then he won four. That's how I saw it. So I was like, man, he got two rounds in the third, very close second. He could win three rounds, you know, without winning another one. So I kind of had him winning the fight.
And that's ultimately why I'm happy with the draw. There's no talk of robbery. It sounds, based on what Dana White said afterwards, they're going to run it right back, which is the right thing to do. I personally hope they got paid, show and win. I hope they both got what they deserved, because that was an incredible fight. And it was just so much fun to watch two guys literally like in the pocket, right? Like when what is it like watching Figueiredo punch like that? Because it feels from television like I'm watching a guy like a Mack truck just hit someone. Like I've never seen that out of a flyweight. It's like boom, boom. The guy has so much power.
Punch being that small, because the effect that his punches have on these flyweights, we've never seen it before. Like, he clubs them, man. He, early in the fight, he was almost like dismissive of Brandon Moreno. His hands were so low.
Yeah.
He's like punching him. But then by the end, he started to pay more attention, right? Because he got hurt in the fourth round. I think it was the fourth where he got hurt with that combination on the edge. I was like, oh my goodness, he hurt him. There was about a 15-second span where we didn't even say a word. We were just like, oh no. Oh. And it's like, that's where, as a commentator, you have to be a commentator and also a fan. Because if you become a fan, then I'm just watching the fight with my friends, right? But we got to talk about the fight. But, like, in those spots, it's hard. That was such a great fight and easily the greatest flyweight fight I've seen of all time. Because, look, I love DJ. DJ and Henry Cejudo had a very technical fight. It did not match up to that.
No.
DJ beating everybody up in the fights prior never amounted to that, because he just dominated them all. So how can we even question whether or not that was the greatest flyweight fight of all time? Because one, you had a dominant champ in DJ, hats off to him. And then him and Cejudo was a good fight, but it wasn't nowhere near the explosion that Saturday night was. It was phenomenal, man.
And when you talk about Figueiredo's power, you also have to give Moreno credit for taking those shots and hardly falling at times. I mean, his chin is just out of this world. Can I ask you, though, about the point deduction? Because, as you know, it's never clear cut. Like, if we're watching football and you face mask someone, it's 15 yards. Like, there's no warnings. There's no none of that. In this sport, you could kick someone below the belt three times. Like, it's not very clear. I think Jason Herzog is one of the best refs in the game, and I applaud him for making that call. That was the right call. Do you agree or disagree?
So, after the fight in November, I asked a question that I should have known the answer to. I got to admit, you put me in contact with someone that really told me the rules of judging, how things are done in the fight game.
Let me give him credit. Ben Cartilage, tremendous judge.
Ben Cartilage gave me all this stuff on how they're judging fights, how they're scoring fights, how they're doing all that. As a student, I should know that. What I learned that time and was reaffirmed on Saturday, it's not the amount of time something happens. It's the effect that it takes on the fight. And a blow like that, that was so low and so hard, immediately should get a point taken away. If there is an action that causes causes the ebbs and flows of the fight to change, as that could have done, that is a 1-point deduction. It doesn't matter how many times. It doesn't matter that it was the first time Davison did it. It was such a big shot that point was warranted, and Jason Herzog made the right call.
And how about Moreno coughing on the ground? I mean, it was hard to watch, but then to your point, comes back and might have stolen the round in some people's eyes. Amazing. And then wins the fourth.
And that's where I thought he won the fight. That's where I thought he won the fight, because And maybe, you know, maybe it's skewed because I saw him on the ground coughing for 3 minutes. He didn't even take the whole five. He came back like he was shot out of a cannon after he got kicked low. But again, everybody, we were almost anticipating Davison Figueiredo's cardio to start to come back to Brandon Moreno, and it never failed him. He was able to push through that, and he fought. The fifth round was his best round outside of round number one. So hats off to the champ. Like, I really hate calling the fights at times because, like you said, it might feel like I'm ignoring one guy. But the reality is, when you got a Duke versus a freaking University of Louisiana or Arkansas Little Rock, and it's a five-point game going down the stretch, you think they're talking much about Duke? They're talking about the opponent a lot of times, and because it's not supposed to be happening. And what Brandon Moreno was doing showed that he belongs, and he is right up there with the champion, Davison Figueiredo.
Well, look, it's very easy for people on Twitter and whatnot to criticize you guys.
I'm only talking about you because you're the one that said it just now. You're the Twitter guy.
But you know what I was tapping into. I was tapping into that. I thought you guys called.
And it was you. I'm talking to you. I don't care about Twitter. You just said that you forgot that maybe Davison was fighting.
Yes, because I'm doing the old little this because I know it will strike a nerve with you. But let me ask you this. Hey, they got to run it back, right? Like, there's no doubt about this. We're not talking about, with all due respect to Cody, Henry, name a guy. They have to run this back right away, correct?
I said something Saturday, Ariel, at the end of the show, and I've never felt so strongly about something. When you have a champion like Davison Figueiredo, a young guy, you kind of need that name. We've talked about this, wrestling, right? Yeah. You go pin Ric Flair, you become the man. You pin Hulk Hogan. The guy has to put you over in order to become the man. Cody Garbrandt was that name that Davison needed to be alongside in order to be truly seen as the star of this division if he won, or maybe he wasn't so good. He doesn't need that anymore. He's the A-side at flyweight, regardless of who's there. And I really believe that. This guy, this young man now, has separated himself in the terms of marketability, in terms of fighting spirit and style, and just being the number one flyweight in the world. So it's like they don't have to rush to the Garbrandt fight anymore because they don't need that name. They can put those two back together, and people will still watch because they know what happened the other day.
Worth repeating, both Davison Figueiredo and Brandon Moreno made history on Saturday. Quickest turnaround for a champ, quickest turnaround for a title challenger. Also, first time in 19 years that a champion headlines two shows back-to-back. When you consider where the flyweight division was at the beginning of this year, and then you consider that he missed weight in February, and you consider where we are now, and I'm not going to get into the fighter of the year / fight of the year stuff because we may have seen both in that fight. We'll save that for a later day. But when you also consider the fact that this guy is now turning into the star that you just said he was, and when you consider the fact that he was in the hospital till 2 a.m. with food poisoning, I mean, it's amazing. Amazing. I wonder what the rematch will look like if the fact that it was on, you know, this fight was on 3 weeks' notice, he cuts weight twice.
Honestly, anytime there's a rematch like that, it really heavily favors the champion.
Why?
That's no knock on Brandon Moreno because this is a great fight, but it was also the circumstances were fantastic for him to find that level of success. Now, his toughness won't go anywhere. His toughness won't – he'll still be there. He'll be game, right? He has that Mexican Warriors mentality. You know, I spoke to that on Saturday night about the guys that he was trying to join as Mexican-born champions. But Figueiredo will have a full training camp. He won't be 3 weeks off. He won't be two weight cuts back-to-back. He won't be in the hospital all night long because of those things. So it will favor him not only because of the physical effects that this situation may have taken, but also the idea that he gets to go out and train for him full time and get prepared, but it still won't be easy.
Dare I say, Davison Figueiredo lit Brandon Moreno up like a pinata, but unlike the pinatas that Brandon Moreno's family
got to hit back.
Hey, well, I'm telling you, they didn't break. He didn't break.
I on Moreno today that I know you guys are like, oh, DC, you love Brandon Moreno, but bro, I'm telling you. I mean, if you squinted hard enough, he reminded you of all the great Mexican
monsters
not giving up on themselves, constantly digging to the body. I mean, he was laying, bro, beautiful. When he was throwing that boom, boom, left body shot, left hook, I was like, oh my goodness, this dude can box. But look, Deus de Guerra, the god of war. I mean, this dude's the real deal.
Figgy, can't you see? And by the way,
I almost said it.
You almost said it. You stopped short. Listen, a couple times you were teasing me, but you know, it's almost like it's a little subtle nod, right? It's not quite Marvin Vittori calling me out who opened the floodgates, but it's subtle. Maybe it's in 2021, we'll just get a full-blown, you know, shout out. Maybe, maybe. A man can dream. All right, let's talk about the co-main event. All right, we talked about the main. We all want to see the rematch. Co-main event, just as notable. Charles Oliveira defeats Tony Ferguson. You could have made a case that every round was a 10-8. You could also make a case you add 10 seconds to the first round. Tony Ferguson either taps or his arm snaps. I don't know how he survived that. But in the end, Oliveira extends his winning streak to 8. Now Ferguson loses 2 in a row. He doesn't get to tie the Anderson Silva record, Oliveira, of 8 straight finishes. But hey, who cares? He gets a big win over Tony Ferguson. And so there's two questions I would ask you, and you could pick whichever way you want to go. Was the story from that fight, Oliveira emerging as a real, real player, maybe a guy who we should have been talking about a few months ago at 155, or was the story coming out of that fight the decline of Tony Ferguson?
You know, it's like, so yes, like I just spoke about, right? Davison and Brandon, the challenger becomes the story. Mm. In this one, it closed, you know, the odds weren't very bad. And what we have seen of Tony Ferguson was that he has been so competitive for so long. But the reality was there were a lot of changes with Tony Ferguson, right? The corner looked different. Mm-hmm. Just the actions. A lot of things looked different about Tony Ferguson last week. And, you know, in hindsight, it's easy to say he didn't seem like the same guy and all this other stuff. We had a very interesting fighter call with him on Thursday. He freaked out and he was yelling at me. We argued a little bit, but ultimately
he yelled at you?
Yeah, we had some back. We have disagreements in terms of coaching philosophy, but ultimately Tony and I were amicable as we parted ways because he's a great guy. But the story is Charles Oliveira. And when you look at Charles Oliveira and you think about how when Habib said he was done, we talked about everybody else and he was just an afterthought. He's no afterthought anymore. In reality is he should be in there. He should be in a title fight. Because I believe the guy is that good, and he dominated Tony Ferguson, and it was not competitive. And can I say something? Even when Tony was winning all those fights, that 12-fight win streak, I feel if he'd have ran into Charles Oliveira with that skill set, Charles would have beat him back then. I don't think it's a – I don't know if it's about Tony being worse or Tony declining. I think Charles Oliveira is just that good, and I think he's finally found the right weight class, and the dude has complete skills, and it's madness. But then, like, when I think about last week's show, right, we talked about a crossroads for Tony Ferguson, right? And I saw you got blasted. Why would they say the crossroads?
Right.
Dude, it was a crossroads fight. And now look at where his career seems to be heading, right?
Right. No, it's a crazy thing because you have two really interesting stories to come out of it. Number one, Charles, as you just spoke about, 27th UFC fight. This guy's been in the UFC since 2010, right? And like I said, he was on that winning streak. For the longest time, he was having trouble making weight at 145. He would go up to 155 and say, I want to go back down. Everyone's like, why you want to go back down? You're good at 155. You're really good at 155. You know the record for most fights before getting a UFC title fight is 25, Michael Bisping. So if he gets one, he'll break that record. And I feel like he's really close. By the way, most submissions in UFC history, 14. This guy is really good. And so I'm wondering, like, does he get the winner of McGregor-Poirier? Because if we assume Gaethje and Chandler are going to fight, that's cool. But, like, he should be fighting a guy like that. Not all due respect to RDA and stuff. Like, I think Oliveira's past those guys at this point. So I'm really curious to see.
Bro, what's up? He just beat the perennial number one guy in the weight class. I mean, Tony Ferguson has been the number one ranked fighter at lightweight. You know, he hasn't been the champ. But since 2014, 15, he's been, like, number one since then. And now Charles Oliveira beat him, but he not only beat him, bro, he dominated Tony. I mean,
it was never close. There was
never a thought where you thought Tony Ferguson was going to win this fight. He was beating him in the stand-up. He was dominating him on the ground. When was the last time we saw somebody just grab Ferguson and throw him on the ground beat him up like that? I mean, Kevin Lee mounted him, but that was a bit of a moment. And then once that moment was over, Tony was competitive again. This dude just demolished him.
And so the harsh reality for Tony is this has been coming. This has been brewing for some time. This didn't start with Justin Gaethje. Tony takes a lot of damage.
Yeah.
Tony's a different kind of cat, right? He doesn't have a structured team. He doesn't have a head coach. He just changed everything. He trains a little differently. He's approaching 37. Like, you shouldn't be shocked. 12 fights in a row is a long stretch to go undefeated. But those fights, these aren't Khabib 12 fights in a row. These are fights where he was getting bloodied, getting beaten, taking damage. Yeah, you know, like
a lot of people.
Remember Lando Venata almost beat him. And I'm not trying to do some revisionist history here. All I'm saying is this shouldn't come as a shock. It has nothing to do with him cutting weight twice in 3 weeks, as some people like to say. It has something to do with at some point you're going to start fighting guys like Gaethje, like Charles Oliveira, and the skills will deteriorate. But it's a sad story because he never got to fight for the undisputed gold. And I don't know if that time is going to happen. Now, could they give it to him? Could he win one fight and they give it to him based on a lifetime achievement? Sure, the sport is different.
It doesn't happen.
Not at 155, because there's so many guys ahead of him now. And that's why I said it was a crossroads fight, right? Because now you have Oliveira, who just went this way, and unfortunately, Tony Ferguson just went the other way.
Well, where does Tony Ferguson even go now? And that's the thing, right? So, like, people talk about some of these older fighters like JDS and those guys, and they're constantly put in there with the best fighters. But he's Tony Ferguson. You cannot say now Tony Ferguson goes and fights just some random dude. He'll end up fighting a very tough guy again, a Paul Felder, a Dan Hooker. He'll end up in there with another high-level guy that might get him again. And it's like, it's very difficult to watch. But the reality is, dude took a lot of damage for a long time. And his toughness is what carried him. And honestly, his toughness also allowed him to even stay in the fight on Saturday, because most guys would have tapped. And I probably would have told Tony to tap if I was out there. I couldn't even watch it, Ariel. I actually put my head to the ground. Like, I can't see. I can't watch, because I figured he would allow him to break his arm before he would ever tap, because he's just that tough.
He's so tough. By the way, can I just say something? I love the Felder idea for both.
Yeah, I mean,
Felder Ferguson to me feels like a very fair fight. They're both coming off losses, tough as nails, fan favorites, sort of at the same spot right now. Tony might be going down a little bit, but hey, I love that fight. That makes a lot of sense to me.
It's a great fight, great matchup, and it would be fun. But ultimately, let's talk about Tony, because again, going into the fight, he was the name, right? He was the A side. We cannot lose track of who Charles Oliveira is, man. This dude is the real deal. And honestly, he's a difficult fight for every single one of those four guys that you listed that might be fighting in January, Poirier versus McGregor. And at some point, if Gaethje fights Chandler, I think Oliveira matches up great against every single one of them.
I agree. You said something earlier that I think is spot on. In my opinion, this was probably the card of the year. I have to think about it a little more, but every single fight mattered, and every single fight felt like it had a breakout performance and someone that you could really get excited about next year. And there was a bit of a theme, especially on the main card, where you had veterans, unfortunately, you know, not looking great, and us wondering about their future. So let's talk about Jacare and Kevin Holland, because again, here you have a breakout performance from Kevin Holland. The man is the UFC's version of Gary Payton circa 1996. He doesn't shut up. He talks from the moment he walks out to the fight's over, but it's fun. Like, I'm not saying that in a bad way. He's very fun. He backs it up, and holy smokes. Again, I'm not saying this is the Jacare who fought Luke Rockhold back in 2011, but man, to see him do that to Jacare off his back and punch him like that and to knock him out, Kevin Holland, 5-0 DC, the third guy in UFC history, modern UFC history, to go 5-0 in a calendar year. But here's the part that we don't talk about enough: 5-0 since May.
Yeah, months, bro. He's pretty much fought every month for the last 7 months, and he's won and turned in his most impressive performance. You know why it was so impressive? Because he got taken out by Jacare super early. I even mumbled it when Joe said, "Oh, beautiful takedown by Jacare." I go, "That's too early," right? Because they're dry. You wonder if this guy can keep up with this jiu-jitsu wizard on the ground. Because even as you get older and you're a guy like Jacare, you might not be able to punch and be as fast, but you can still grapple. You can always grapple. You can always put your stuff on it. You're so familiar on the ground. Kevin handled that beautifully. The transition, he handled the ground game beautifully. But boy, when he was able to create some distance, he generated so much power. It was madness. You know, Ariel, he literally put up his knee shield with his right leg to get Jacare off of him. Because what you want to do as a top man is you want to pressure guys down, get him flat, back flat on the mat. He pushes Jacare back with his knee shield. And then once the knee shield clears space, he slingshots himself with his right leg down towards the mat. And as he's doing that, he threw that punch. I mean,
it was insane. Incredible power and athleticism.
I mean, what? He slingshotted himself into the punch, it hits Jacare right here, which is the hardest part of your head. Yeah. Dude, most times when you're getting punched, you want to kind of put your head and make him hit this because it hurts. Jacare somehow, and then Jacare goes over the back of his legs, and then Holland's just over him like boom, boom, yeah. boom. Dude, this dude has all the swag. This dude's in the cage like dancing. Jacare, I mentioned it on the broadcast. Yeah. I was like, Kevin Holland's got all the swag. Jacare looks like a 41-year-old man trying to keep up with him. Jacare's like kind of dancing still. He look like me out there. But this dude, I like Kevin Holland, man. He's the real dude. Everybody likes him. I mean, this whole thing I saw called Big Mouth on the preview before the fight.
Great.
To see where that kid's come and done it his way and still acts the same way. That thing that turned everybody off before, right? He was always yapping, is now the thing that people look forward to when he goes to fight, because either they love it or they hate the fact that he won't shut up, but nobody's been able to shut him up yet.
That was a great promo, and I'm happy that they kept that in there because it tells the story that he's been doing this for a long time. Last time he fought, it just so happened around a month or a half or so ago. And by the way, this guy just had COVID. Let's not forget. He recovered from that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's insane. But remember, Izzy was in attendance and everyone was like, Kevin Holland, sit down. Now, can I be honest? I would love to see it just for the trash talk. I would rather see Kevin Holland versus Izzy than Izzy versus Jan Błachowicz right now, just for the buildup, just for the trash talk. And I think Kevin Holland can actually, like, he could represent. He could stay in there with him. No, am I crazy?
I think Kevin Holland would fight his tail off. Now, let's not get crazy. Israel,
the trash talk would be fun.
Now, it would be – the trash talk would be great. But, this is Israel Adesanya we're talking about.
Now, I know.
Beat him. I think down the line, as Kevin continues to come into his own, that's when we need that, – that hopefully we get to see it. But, I mean, the prospects now of who he – because think about this. Jacare Souza, in his last fight, fought Jan Błachowicz to a split decision. Then he got injured and he was away for a while. But if he hadn't gone up to 205, Jacare would still be ranked at 185. So Kevin Holland would be skyrocketing up the rankings again. Bro, you know what this dude told me? He was like, I was like, hey, man, you said you wrote something about Joaquin Buckley on your Twitter. He was like, I didn't write that. I don't do my Twitter. He goes, but the reality is I have no problem with it. They know me. He goes, that's my son. I birthed him into the UFC. He goes, I love to see my children. He said, I'd love to see my children have success. And he listed every guy that he's beat in the last few months. And he goes, I'm interested to see what this one will turn into. I'm his grandfather. Oh, he's like, he's so crazy. I was like, yeah, I'm going to use this. He goes, use it. I don't care. He's like, I said, so when you see him, Buckley doing as well as he goes, Kevin Holland said, I hope that he continues to win because I know if they try to match us up again, it's easy money. He said that. I was like, yo, who says stuff like that? But then when you win fights like he's winning, he can say whatever he wants. I'm all in on it.
And how about the fact that he still can't get in the game? Marvin isn't in the game 7 days later. Buckley isn't in the game. No one's in the game. And you guys put out last week, I saw Alex Perez and Michael Chandler.
But look at how fast. Hey, but listen. Guys, I'm going to tell you this. Marvin, Kevin.
Marvin is mad. I'm working on it, Marvin. I just want to let you know I'm working on it.
Marvin, yeah. Kevin, things are happening behind the scenes.
Alex Perez and Michael Chandler. Michael Chandler has fun in the UFC. He gets another gift, another thing on a silver platter.
It takes time, guys, to build these characters. Alex Perez just fought for a championship.
Chandler hasn't fought for anything in the UFC yet.
Michael Chandler is Ric Flair. Michael Chandler is Ric Flair. You put Ric Flair in the game, dog. When Ric Flair left the WCW for the WWE, what did Vince do? He won the Royal Rumble and you put the title right on him. Mike Chandler is Ric Flair. So as Mike is styling and profiling, turning down fights left and right, big league and everybody, it's hilarious. But you put Michael Chandler in the game and those guys are coming soon, hopefully.
What a slap in the face to the Kevin Hollins of the world. By the way, if Michael Chandler comes out and wins his debut and says, I say this with a tear in my eye. This is the greatest moment ever. What a great promo that was. Anyway, the real world champion. Remember that?
In my champion.
He was they wouldn't talk about the belt.
This was the best promo and oh my god, where's Flair? Flair's like in the corner, Bobby Heenan. Bobby Heenan did the greatest call of a Royal Rumble of all time. Flair wins the title. Him, perfect. They're in the back. Flair's got two titles. He left with the WCW belt. It was the best. That was and still is one of the greatest moments of my history in wrestling. I also showed my kid, Daniel, Ric Flair versus Macho Man when Flair was running around with the pictures of Miss Elizabeth. And Daniel's like, they cheat so much. I hate Ric Flair, Dad. I hate Mr. Perfect. And why is his name Mr. Perfect? Bro, I know I'm going on a tangent, but this was wrestling. This is what you and I fell in love with the sport for.
1992. DC, I have to ask you about JDS. Obviously lost that fight. Thought you guys were a little tough on him. I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. A little tough, but the facts are he lost. It was close, but it hit the ear. It was legal.
Yeah,
Is he done?
So again, the story is Ciryl gone. The story is Ciryl gone, man.
Right.
And it's sad because of Junior protesting. He
didn't try to take anything away from him. The guy just got knocked out.
No, but still, Ariel, like. I don't like – that's one of the things that bothers me the most. When guys jump up, I wasn't done. But then he's like – they're like staggering all over the ring. It's like – I don't like that. Mm. Also, JDS is all class. Like, let's not make any mistake about it. I think he's a sweet person. He's one of the nicest guys in the world. But the reality is he got hit with that jab. He actually started to evade. I don't want to say run away. But he started to push in his chips a little bit, right? When he started to throw those big shots and he was missing so big, he was going all in. He was either going to knock this kid out or he was going to lose to him. And Gon just stayed the course and got the victory. And this guy's important for the heavyweight division.
He's legit. Undefeated Frenchman.
The real deal. JDS got hit with a clean shot. That jab about finished him. I mean, he faded to the edge of the octagon and he actually turned away from Ciryl Gon. That's why he got elbowed like that. So, make Ciryl the story. He deserves that.
Ciryl's the story. He is undefeated. He's really big. He's really strong. By the way, hopefully the UFC gets to go to France in 2021. You'll probably be calling the card. Remember this name when they go to France. They'll go with Ciryl Gane, obviously. He should probably be in the main event. But there's a guy named Morgan Charrière who just won the vacant Cage Warriors title, The Last Pirate. Huge social media sensation. He's from France as well. He'll probably be on the card. You tell them on the broadcast that Helwani told you about him first. Now, Mackenzie Dern, Cub Swanson, Rafael Fiziev, Gavin Tucker, Tisha Torres, Chase Hooper. I mean, on and on it went. It was a great night. But I do have to get to the ad read here because we have to pay some bills, DC.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So UFC 256 was one for the books, a great event, maybe the best event of the year. Maybe we saw the breakout fighter of the year. Maybe we saw the fighter of the year. Maybe we saw the fight of the year. We saw some comeback fighters like Cub Swanson, Mackenzie Dern having a great 2020 campaign with their new team, Jason Perillo. But DC, let's put that aside right now and let's talk about the breaking news. The soldier of God, Yoel Romero, has agreed to terms with Bellator, right? Last week, we had told you about the fact that he left the UFC. And I said on this show that Bellator and PFL weren't interested. Well, guess what? They weren't interested. And anyone who's tweeting me right now, probably saying, oh, you were wrong. Your sources were wrong. You should have listened to this guy or that guy. No, you're wrong. And in fact, if you want to know that I'm right, Scott Coker did an interview with MMA Junkie later in the week and confirmed that I was right, that he wasn't interested. But two interesting things happened, DC, along the way. Number one, Rumble Johnson signed with Bellator. We will get to him in a second as well. Yep. That's a new face at 205. Who saw that coming? And just think about the idea of Rumble Johnson, Yoel Romero going toe-to-toe at 205. And number two, DC, I don't want to, blow smoke, but we got influence in this game. And so there might have been people who sat around watching us talk about how crazy it is that they're not signing Yoel Romero and that he's actually still really good at 43. And there might be some people out there that said, you know what? Maybe DC and Helwani are right. Let's give him. I'm just going to put it out.
I believe we do have influence.
I'm giving us like 80% credit for this Yoel Romero signing.
I'm taking my
maybe 85.
I mean, that seems pretty high, but okay, I'll take it. I mean, I've taken 50% credit for Fight Island, so it's not like I'm gonna act like
I'm bringing you with me. I could take the 85% by myself. I'm bringing you.
Why?
With
Why would you take it by yourself when I called Scott Coker? Like, yo, you really don't want this guy?
You called Scott Coker?
I called Scott Coker. I'm like, can you imagine? I was like, yo, Scott, I mean, you don't want him? Could you imagine Rumble Johnson versus Yoel Romero at 205? Like, they're both out there now. You don't want him? So, you know, like, come on, you can't take all the credit.
Okay, so what do you think of – okay, which one's bigger in your opinion? Rumble signing, because that came out of nowhere, or Yoel signing? Which is a bigger deal for Bellator?
I think they're both massive. I think Rumble because he's younger. Fence. I think Rumble because he's younger. That's why. I think Rumble because he's a tad bit younger, and – everybody knows who Rumble is and was. I mean, he's intimidating. What you want is a champion that can strike fear into the hearts of people. If he's able to replicate what he was doing in PFL before he went to the UFC at 205, remember when he beat up Andre Arlovsky?
Oh, World Series of Fighting.
Was that World Series of Fighting at the time? Sorry.
That was heavyweight, by the way. That was heavyweight.
Yes. And then coming to 205 at the UFC and doing what he did to Ryan Bader. And doing what he did to Phil Davis and doing what he did to Glover, who looks phenomenal now. If he can replicate that, you got a real prize on your hand in Rumble Johnson. So I think Rumble because he's younger. But now you got a 205-pound division that's insanely viable in the world when you got – bro, listen to this crazy thing. Rumble, Romero, Anderson, Bader – and
hey, DC,
Nemkov?
Vadim Nemkov is the guy who just beat Ryan Bader.
Yeah.
Let me throw one out there to the Bellator brass. 205 Grand Prix with these eight names. Vadim Nemkov, Ryan Bader, Anthony Johnson, Corey Anderson, Yoel Romero, Phil Davis, Lyoto Machida, and let's throw in the middleweight champ, Gegard Mousasi, who used to fight at 205. I mean, you talk about a tournament. That's a tournament.
Hey, they're giving $1 million for these tournaments, right? The featherweight tournament. That's the tournament for Bellator. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. That's the tournament. And I say you do it for $2 million.
Yeah, why not, Scott? Come on.
Gegard doesn't want to go up to 205. Put a little more money up there. I bet he'll go fight. But yes, oh my goodness. Could you imagine those first round matchups? Look, there was a time when we were in Strikeforce, and Scott's keen to doing stuff like this.
Yeah.
We're in Strikeforce, and they put all those great heavyweights in that tournament. And it made Strikeforce for the moment. Everybody's like, they got the best heavyweights in the world, even though Cain Velasquez was the best heavyweight in the world. You know that. Yeah. At that, Cain was still the best heavyweight in the world. It wasn't anyone in that tournament. But it gave the idea that in that weight class, we – were at least competitive, and we had more heavyweights. You put those eight guys in the weight class in that tournament, it'll give the impression that they're on the same footing as the UFC's 205-pound division, especially if John Jones or Israel Adesanya isn't the champion.
DC, this is what – look, we're not trying to root for anything – the sport is better, and anyone who's being honest with you would tell you this, the sport is better when there's a lot of great things going on, right? When it's not one organization that's dominating. And to see a division like this, at a time when 205 has felt a little thin, right, together.
Jones left. If Jones is back at 205, there is no competition. I mean, it's no competition. And the reality is –
last two fights are pretty close.
And the reality is, look – I'm not sitting here for a second saying that division is better than the UFC's, because it isn't. But it does give the idea that there is some high-level talent outside of the UFC that if you put them together, it makes for a fantastic tournament.
There's a conversation to be had is all I'm saying, and that makes it a lot of fun.
Better division?
There's a conversation to be had especially with Rumble. We don't know what Rumble is, right? We don't know what Rumble is.
But again,
Dean Nemkov is really, really good.
Guy's good.
Yeah,
but Dean Nemkov is insanely good.
You can't dismiss it. There's some division, like you can't say the Bellator middleweight division is as good as the UFC. That's crazy. Lightweight, no. But there's a conversation to also be had about Romero and Rumble, like this fight that just kind of came out of nowhere at 205 would be really fun. Remember, Romero started his career at 205, and then he actually got knocked out, moved down to 185, and of course had a legendary run. But I'm really curious to see Romero Rumble. If they want to put that together, this little tournament, Vadim and Corey Anderson, he recently joined and looked good in his debut.
You leave the belt inside the Grand Prix.
Like they did. By the way, you know what's so amazing about the Rumble thing? He's still one of the most feared guys in the sport. Oh, right?
Like,
and you fought him twice, both times as he was surging. Winning streak, you fight him. Loses, winning streak, you fight him. And I hope you don't mind me saying this, but I don't recall you ever being so confident before two fights. There was
But it was different. It was different, right? I knew Anthony from a long time ago too, and I kind of had an idea that if I did certain things, I can kind of almost like big brother him. So I would do it to him all the time.
Like, what does that mean, big brother? How do you big brother Rumble Johnson?
Every time I was around him, I'll just tell him I was, gonna beat him up and like just kind of
big brother. And it got in here.
Getting his head, mess with him a lot, Wow. But I've known him since he was in junior college when I was at Oklahoma State, right? So all anybody wanted to do was go to Oklahoma State. So he'd come and work these camps and we would just wrestle and he kind of, the guys would take him down and just, it was different. I felt like I mashed up well with him.
I love it. You know why I love this? Because I feel like as time will go on, I mean, your last fight was only 4 months ago, but I feel like as time will go on, you will start to be known as like the cuddly announcer guy and people will forget this Daniel Cormier. Like you're just talking about big brothering one of the most feared strikers and powerful strikers in UFC history. Like it ain't no thing. What was that line you said about Rumble? Like, he quit to Josh Koscheck. He quit. What was that line that you said before the first one?
Nah, I don't remember that. I don't know.
Josh Koscheck. What did you say? You know what I'm talking about.
Well, because it was the guys that had submitted him. I was like, if you're going to lose to those guys, you're definitely going to lose to me. But it was just stuff like that, right? But the reality is nobody else could do that. And he would beat the crap out of everybody. And, hey, Ryan Bader. When he fought Ryan Bader was so scared that he shot from halfway across the octagon just not to get punched by Rumble. Listen, dog, he was so scared that he shot from halfway across the octagon not to get punched by Rumble. And then when Rumble got on top of him, he just beat him up. It was not – Ryan Bader had just beat Rashad Evans. And Rumble beat him in like a minute because he was so scared. That's the thing. Dude, Glover Teixeira, it took 15 seconds.
I know.
Like, crazy. That dude has power. He hits hard, bro. He hits hard. And –
by the way, I'd love to see that rematch, Rumble versus Bader. That's the second most notable.
You think Bader would fight him different this time?
I think so. I think he's a more confident fighter. But that's the second most notable thing to happen that day in Newark. You know what number one was, right?
I got that haircut.
Is that called the Beijing, by the way? Someone told me it's called Beijing.
Now they put Beijing in my hair. My hairline was beautiful. It was all the way down here. Bro, it's been a long time since I didn't have 8 inches between my eyebrow and my edge up. I mean, it was like 3 9. I was like, dang, I look good. I was like at Beijing, but I knew I couldn't go in there like that.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, so yeah, no, you're looking great these days. You know what else looks good, DC, as we transition? The final UFC card of 2020. We have finally made it. Who would have thought, right? Back in April and May when this show started, that we'd actually make it to the end. And that we would actually like get all the fight cards in. Like they did in the end, they ended up, we haven't had a break. There has been a UFC show, by the way, every single weekend, at least one since July 11th. That's how crazy, right? This run. July 11th. To December 19th, there's been at least one UFC show every week. And this card is phenomenal. Now, right now, there's 15 fights on the card. 15 fights. Good luck to you. You're calling this one, right? It's going to be 45 hours long.
I was doing my research and I was like, I'm done. I was like, oh my goodness, I'm done. I was like, I could not believe I was done. There are 30 fighters for next Saturday. But I think now at this point, right, because like you said, no fight cards have been canceled. But there was a fight card that I called where we had 8 fights because we fell off because of COVID. Last week we had 10 fights because of COVID. So I think now you put more fights, and if they all stay, they stay. But if you lose a few fights, you still end up with your 12. I mean, they lost 2 fights on Saturday morning, I think, last weekend, or Friday morning after weigh-in. So you, I think you almost got to add extra fights and then see how they hold up.
A few different directions here. Wonderboy Thompson, Jeff Neal, both haven't fought this year. They fought at the end of last year. That's a huge fight at 170. Jose Aldo against Chito Vera. Michelle Pajeda against Chaos Williams. Anthony Pettis versus Alex Morrow. Which one interests you the most? I don't know what the answer is to this.
I think it starts at the main event, right? I think it starts at the main event. But I think that we're right in that same situation as last weekend. And I think all of them are our new favorite word, crossroads fights, right?
Interesting.
Because if Jose Aldo loses again, right? And now what do you do with them, right? You're going to start seeing a lot of those names, those great names from the past, kind of starting to hit the door because, like Dana said, there's going to be cuts every single week. Chito Vera can push himself into the upper echelon of the division if he beats Jose Aldo.
Neil,
Steven Wonderboy. Again, Wonderboy has fought for the belt a whole bunch of times. Jeff Neal's trying to go past him in order to make himself a real contender. He gets past him. Now you start wondering what's next for Wonderboy. Wonderboy's got some time, right? He's still very viable. He's still very good. He's still young. You know, doesn't seem like he's been on the decline for a while. But the fight that's fun, Chaos Williams Michelle Pajeda. Because that's going to be madness. Because Chaos Williams, mad. Chaos Williams looks so mad, bro, when he's out there. Scary. But Michelle Pajeda can fight. And the last fight that he fought, I was like, who is this dude? He wasn't flipping and jumping and doing all that crazy stuff to expend it, use all of his energy. He was just kind of in the fight doing his thing. Because you remember that one time he fought my boy Tristan, Canadian Tristan. He beat up on Tristan early, and Tristan, just little small Tristan, kept fighting. All that flipping got him tired. He's not doing that no more. So now not only is he big and strong and physical and exciting, but he's a very technically good fighter.
You know, right after Kevin Holland's win on Saturday, they aired a promo for this fight, right? And all I wrote was, I tweeted out, as you watch this, a reminder that Kevin Holland on the regional scene once beat Jeff Neal. Jeff Neal came after me, said, oh, why you got to be like that, Ariel? I'm like, wait a second. First of all, it's factual.
Did the fight happen, though? But did the fight happen?
It did.
Who won?
Kevin Holland.
So you didn't lie?
I didn't lie.
So then what's the problem?
Oh, why you got to be like that? Why you got to be a hater?
Well, it's not a hater. So what you're doing is taking a guy that's in the news right now for having a knockout that Jacare Souza just had. Mentioning the guy coming up next week, right?
Who's on a crazy winning streak, undefeated in the UFC.
All they did was fight. And you said, hey, those guys fought. That's it.
Kevin Holland. How many people know that? Did you know that?
Not a knock on you. It's not a knock on you that Kevin Holland won in the regional circuit. That's it. Not a knock. I mean, again, points to the point that sometimes guys can be sensitive.
Did you know that?
No.
What's going on over here? What happened? What, are you tired?
I'm not tired, bro. I'm just like, I mean, you know. You're over here talking about the first fight. I mean, you're talking about freaking the first fight of the night.
I thought maybe you were saying you stayed up late watching the Bills and
that sweater, bro. It's that sweater.
The Steelers, you
that
know,
sweater saying. Seems so comfortable.
It is really great.
Like I want to wrap myself in it and go to bed.
You want to wear it on Saturday? Imagine you wore this on the broadcast. What would happen?
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. A beautiful day.
Anyway, I'm excited about this card. I'm excited to see Neil back. Neil had that great win over Mike Perry, which feels like it happened 5 years ago at this point. Wonderboy got back on track in November of last year against Vicente Luque. I remember it looked like that. For a minute.
Luque was on a roll, too.
But he hasn't fought this year because he broke his hand after that fight. Huge fight for Pettis, I think. Huge fight for Jose Aldo. Huge fight for Marlon Vera. And what about your boy, Duran?
Huge Duran's fight for back him. Out there next week, yep. But Duran's back out there next week. Got a tough fight.
You got to call another one of his fights? Jeez. Huh? You got to call another.
I don't have a choice anymore, right? When you retire, like, you don't have the option of saying, I don't want to call my friends fights anymore. Like, it doesn't work like that. I got a job to do, but I will be excited to be there to watch him compete. And I know that he's done the right things to this point, you know, to prepare himself to win next weekend.
Dare I say crossroads for Duran too?
It's a big fight for Duran. Mm-hmm. And I ain't going to sugarcoat it. Duran Nguyen has to win this fight or, you know, the UFC dream might be done. You know,
wow.
There's a lot of challenge. There's a lot of pressure on a kid like that. You know, he came into the UFC and had a fantastic performance. And even in the fight, dude, he lost to Darren Stewart. It was a split decision, mm-hmm. right? So it's not like he's been ran out of the arena every time he's been in there. Fought a tough Gerald Meerschaert. It's not like he's fighting bums. He's fighting good guys, and he's fighting them competitively because even in the Meerschaert fight, it was one round apiece before the third round. So he's competitive. But now he's done some different things in his training to prepare himself, and he feels confident that this weekend he'll get his hand raised, as do I, in regards to him winning the fight on Saturday.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
By the way, can I ask you about something? Speaking of a teammate, we were going to get to it last week, but didn't have time. But I was just curious, you know, Khabib did this press conference a few weeks ago, and he said that one of his goals is to get MMA in the Olympics, right? Yeah. No one would know about this process better than you, two-time Olympian. I have long believed that it will be very hard, given the structure of the sport, to have MMA in the Olympics. When you compare it to like Olympic boxing, it's different with the headgear and everything. Could this ever happen? Like, do you ever foresee a day that we can have MMA in the Olympic Games?
You know, Khabib and I actually talked about it the other day, just kind of talking. And I told him, you know, I said, you know, man, you know how you do it, right? I said, if people are trying to put fighting in the Olympics, the Olympics is 18 days. That's the extent of the competition, right? Competitive days. I think it's 18, right?
Mm-hmm.
18 days?
Something like that.
But what you do is at the very beginning, you do the opening ceremonies. People come ready to compete. You do 8-person brackets, right? Where you got 3 fights. You fight like PFL and the Ultimate Fighter. You take away the elbows. You take away all those things that can really damage someone. You can wear headgear, right? You can wear.
Can you wear headgear though?
You can wear headgear. We wear headgear to spar all the time.
But like guillotines and stuff, how can you do that with a headgear?
That actually makes it easier to do. Chasing chokes is actually easier with a headgear because it's hard for the people to pull their necks.
But is that fair then?
I mean, I think you use it. If you're worried about the cuts, you use it. I don't think you need it. But I think that you can use, instead of the four-ounce gloves, there's these 8-ounce gloves that have a little bit of a more padding on the front side. Yep. You use those. You take away elbows, right? You fight at the beginning of the games. You make weight. Person that wins and goes to the semis. 5-6 days later, they make weight again, plus 2 kilos. So you get like 4 pounds, right? You fight. People that get to the finals, give them 1 more kilo. So now you're like 6 pounds overweight at the end of the game, and you fight for the gold medal. That's how you do it. That's how you spread it out and get it done.
Problem is, there's no real amateur system in this sport, right? So you'd have to almost like create a whole system. Like no one, like people just go straight from, you know, whatever to the pros. Kayla Harrison didn't go amateur, right? Even CM Punk, for God's sakes, didn't go amateur. Very rare to see guys, especially in this day and age, who's a big time prospect. Like I can assure you, Clarissa Shields isn't going to go amateur, correct? So
no.
There is no amateur system. I mean, I guess, okay, I'll take that back.
There is amateurs. There is amateur.
It's more of a European amateur thing. Right?
There's even amateur fighting in the U.S., right? Javier Mendez used to do amateur shows, right? So you put those kids, and instead of doing all these local amateur shows, you start trying to create an Olympic system to try to build through and get to the Olympic Games. Hey, listen, it's a very, very difficult
undertaking. Idea, yeah.
But could work if done the correct way.
Okay.
I would help. If people were trying to get him, I would help. I would definitely try to be on the forefront of trying to help get MMA into the Olympic Games, for sure.
I love that. I love that. By the way, speaking of an Olympian, shout out to Anthony Joshua. Big win on Saturday. Hopefully we get to see that fight against Tyson Fury in 2021. I don't care what anyone says. Boxing is on fire. Canelo, Triple G are also fighting this weekend. Yeah, and you got UFC. So much going on in the world of sports. And I do want to mention, oh, by the way, shout out to Bella Mir, who went 2-0, Frank Mir's daughter. She's looking good. She's looking good. But I wanted to mention before we go, rest in peace to Zeus, to Devo. Yeah,
Tiny Lister,
man, a legend.
Yeah, sucks. You know, one of those situations where you just don't know. You know, you just don't know what's going on in people's lives. And, you know, the poor guy got sick a while back, and then it reared its ugly head again, and he ended up passing away. Scary guy. I remember when he first got to the WWE, I was like, oh, my goodness. He had that thing, and he would make his eyes kind of cross. I was like, oh, my God, who is this dude?
Did you see No Holds Barred back in the day?
I watched a movie, too, yeah, when I was a kid. I mean, I watched everything wrestling, man. I loved it.
When he debuted in 1989 in WWE or WWF at the time, looking the way he did with the eye and the Z in his head and that outfit. You remember he wore like the big thing, the shoulder pad? I was terrified of the guy, like legit terrified. 7-year-old me was legit terrified of him. And then, of course, he had a great acting career, Friday and all that, Debo. But Zeus, man, what a legend. What a legend that guy was.
It sucks. This year has just been very difficult, but we're almost done. We're almost done. We put our head down and we kept plugging away, and we're at the end now.
Yeah. It kind of drives me nuts when people say we're almost done, because, like, what do you expect is going to happen on January 1st? Like, this is all not going to change. But you know, I appreciate the optimism.
No. Listen. You want to just be a killjoy?
No,
you
know,
the whole world's looking
for almost. Oh, I can't wait for this year to be over. No, yeah, and what's going
to
happen?
When you get to a year where you're just getting bad news after bad news, you're like, let's turn the page. Let's just turn the page. I don't expect January 1st for all the bad news to completely stop. But I mean, bro, in the year where in 2020 I lost Kobe Bryant at the beginning of the year, and I lose Tiny Lister and the rest of these people that we've lost all through the season.
No, of course.
Through the year done. It's like, man, can we turn the page and get to something new? That's it.
Well, that is a great segue to remind everyone that we have one show left.
Wait, no. Year.
Yeah. Why? That's it. We're doing one more show on December 21st. And then we'll have a couple weeks off, and we will return on January 11th. There will be a Helwani Knows Award show on January 6th. More on that later. But as far as DC and Helwani, the show that was born.
The time that they had for us to do our show, you're like, can I just do my award show? I mean, listen,
you got to admit.
The way you are. I said
on my show on Mondays that this guy and this guy's great at what, and you know how many texts I got about that? Man, DC can't even say our show. He can't even say DC and Helwani. You know how many texts I got about that? Yeah, got so many texts. But we'll have plenty of time to talk about this.
Hey, well, how about you doing shows with everybody? I mean, I can't. I turn away. You're on a show with Marundi. Then I turn and look the other way. You on the show with Chael. Then I look and you're doing a post-fight show with Brett. I'm like, oh, so I can't even look away for 1 second because you're running around with everybody. You're the pretty girl at the prom that just wants to take all the dates.
Listen. Some people, they're starting to call me Side Piece Helwani over here.
Because, yeah, you really are. Yeah.
No. Because you go out to Vegas and you have a great time with your friends.
I'm
the first phone call after you forget all about me.
I haven't even met your family. That's crazy. Dale has.
Oh, my God. This is great stuff. Anyway, DC, we're out of time. Everyone, thank you so much for supporting us. Continue to rate, download, subscribe, review, all those things and more. And we'll do it one more time next week, at least for this year. And then we'll be back 2 weeks later. Like, we talked about this long break. It's like a 2-week break. Everyone calm down. Anyway, back next week, same time and place. Until then, we say peace. We're out of here.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.